So this week's topic in Baltimore, for the most part, the most more Litvish, non-Hasidish circles, is not so controversial to discuss shaving in Halacha and Kabbalah, but in some conversations, not spheres related, in some communities, it's actually a very big, hot topic. It was obviously very controversial when electric shavers first came onto the scene in the early 20th century. A lot of debate about that. Even before that, you see in certain tshuvas that we'll discuss today that there was a lot of debate, very strong debate about these issues. A few things that maybe we'll shoot down tonight, some misconceptions perhaps. I don't want to take away any punchlines before I set up the joke. But I think some misconceptions are, number one, that nobody matirs using a razor. And we'll see, perhaps not halacha lemaisa, but there have been suggestions and methods to do that, which, as I said, I would say are usher. I want to start out with that, but at least we'll see the thought has been, suggested. And in addition to that, I think most people assume that al pi Kabbalah, one is not supposed to touch their beard. They're supposed to let it grow long, at least, maybe not even ever trim it or touch it, to the point that some people won't even stroke their beard because they're afraid they may inadvertently pull out a hair. So those are two things that I think we'll see aren't so pashut. Not that they're not advocated by certain rabbanim and groups in Klal Yisrael, and respectably, it's a good shita, but I don't think it's as universal as people think in either way. The topic is obviously because this Friday, independent of professional reasons, one is allowed to shave, at least Ashkenazim, L'Kavod Shabbos, because Lag BaOmer is on a Sunday, so if you're shaving L'Kavod Shabbos or haircut this Friday, it is mutter. And obviously for professional reasons, nowadays most people do have rasur. It's pretty easy to find leniencies, even more than the 3 weeks, for business and professional reasons. Depending on one circumstance, that's a different story. But either way, shaving's on people's minds. So we know the Torah says, once by the Kohanim and once for the general populace, that you're not allowed to cut your payas. That's a different shiur what that's referring to. And you're not allowed to destroy your beard. And you're not allowed to cut your beard. And the beard, there are really only 5 points on the face that constitute the places where you can't destroy your beard. There is some debate as to exactly the definition of those 5 points. The minhag is, and because of halacha, because of machlokas, we're dealing with the deraisa, is not to do whatever the hashchasas hazakon, whatever the destruction of the beard is, that we don't destroy it anywhere on the face. When it comes to the neck, it seems the neck should not be included. However, there's a Rabbeinu Chananel that we seem to posen like that. You shouldn't destroy the hairs on your neck either, whatever the term destruction means, we'll have to discuss. Because maybe you'll go a little too far, it's too close, it's therefore not advocated that one use a razor or other methods of destruction, which we'll discuss more and more throughout the evening, on the neck either. On the back of the head is a totally different story. We're not going to discuss that tonight, but there are leniencies for that. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the front part of his face and neck. So, we have...
It's nothing to do with Begadisha. Because I've had people suggest to tell me, brother, we don't shave because it's your Begadisha.
So, we'll address that a little bit. There is a separate issue that you're not allowed to dress or act like a woman. Certain methods of beautification are considered to be in the women's department of things. It's not historically been done by men. And therefore, some rabbanim, even if you weren't in violation of destroying the beard in the original issue that we just said, may have said you still shouldn't do it because of those reasons. We'll get over that in a few minutes to show why that is not a problem in today's day and age. So this isser, there are two things we have to recognize. There's shaving and there's destroying. There's giluach and there's hashchasa. There's shaving the hair and then there's destroying the hair. And sometimes you can do hashchasa without giluach and sometimes you can do giluach without hashchasa. What do I mean? We'll talk about different methods of shaving. there are creams that one can apply to one's face that will burn off the hair, essentially. They're not very pleasant. They usually have a foul odor. And if you leave them on the face for too long, they can actually start to burn the skin. And then people can have reactions to them as well, and burning feeling sensations, even if they're not left on for too long. So when the electric shavers came out, that method, which had been the primary method of getting a close shave, so to speak, went out really quickly, because it was just practically people didn't appreciate having to do that if they wanted to have a clean shaven mug. That, you're able to get to the root of the hair, essentially. You're able to get a very close shave, or fairly close shave, but it's not gilu. You're not shaving. At the same point in time, if I clip my beard with the scissors, I'm shaving, or I'm at least trimming, but I'm not getting so deep that necessarily we have to discuss if there's a limit, that it's not necessarily hashkasa. I'm not necessarily destroying it. So there are two aspects we have to see, and we have to determine what did the Torah aser? Did the Torah aser giluach, hashkasa, giluach with hashkasa, both together? What's going on? So, Gemara's in Makkos, it's talked about a few other places as well, but we see that one is allowed to use a scissors, and ke'en tar, something that's like a razor. What does that mean? So, sometimes when looking at it, you can read it, and for many of you shown them, it actually seems this way. Ke'en tar means something that's not exactly a razor, but it's an implement or something else that will give you the same effect as a razor, but you're not using the method as a razor produces. Using san, which would be a cream or something like that, is found also. And therefore, we have to determine what's the exact iser. So, the Chafetz Chaim, when these electric clippers first came out, which isn't exactly full shavers we have now, he said it was a problem. And he said, because it's clipping, too much hair, and therefore it's hashchasa, and therefore you cannot use these items because you're in violation of the Torah's prohibition of giluach with hashchasa. And, these trimmers work more of a method of a scissors than a razor, which we're going to have to talk about in a second. And it's also important to note that they didn't get as close a shave as nowadays a regular electric shaver will give. So it would stand to reason that the Chafetz Chaim would most probably not advocate using electric shavers in today's day and age if he was ushering even these electric trimmers, which didn't have this concept of not working with the same mechanism and also getting a closer shave.
It was also a new technology to them, so
we've
had it for many years, so
correct.
We investigated.
100%. That's also very true. Now, the difference between the razor and the shaver, when you take a razor against your face, so you're pushing against the skin, you're exposing a little bit by the pressure, the hair, and you're going with a quick one motion, you're clipping the hair itself. A scissors, you're actually combining the hair, it's going above one blade, and the other blade, the two blades together, are clipping the hair in a scissor-like motion. So even though they're very similar, one, the razor is getting to the bottom of the hair and giving a slice at the hair itself, whereas the scissor, you have a bottom blade and a top blade, and it's between the two blades that you're actually clipping, so it's a drop higher, even though you're not necessarily going to, depending on how far deep with an electric shaver or something like that you'll get, but it is a different method of shaving. Now the trimmers worked more like a scissors than they did with a razor. That being the case, many have suggested that the Chafetz Chaim, his issue is that it cut too close. Ke'en tar that's being discussed in the Gemara would only be for a circumstance when you don't get a completely close shave. You have to have something left over. What needs to be left over, we'll discuss in a few moments, but that would seem to be what the Chafetz Chaim was suggesting, that something would need to be left over. Others have maintained, no, that wasn't his issue. It was the mechanism wasn't exactly like a scissors, and therefore it was the method of the cutting, and you know, that was more of the issue. Okay, we'll leave it open, but it does stand to reason that the Chafetz Chaim would probably not be comfortable with today's electric shavers. What would be the shear? What is the shear of Shchasas Zakan? So, as I mentioned in the beginning, is there a way to use an actual razor blade against one's face to shave? Now, that seems to be exactly what the Mishnah says you're not allowed to do. The Gemara says you can't do that. However, Rav Wolf Boskovitz, you've probably never heard of, but he was the first Rav of Budapest. Lived, you know, a couple hundred years ago. The very first Rav of Budapest, very prominent Rav, published several Svarim. He asked the Noda Yehuda the following question. He said, if I've shaved with something to give me a close shave, maybe some, maybe scissors, whatever it is, and I've gotten a close enough shave that essentially there's nothing left, can I now use a razor? His starting point is, for other halachas, para aduma, having two hairs, how long the hairs have to be, shaving for a nazir and things of this nature, negayim and things of that nature, it seems that the definition in many of these places of how much hair being left over is considered a hair still standing is that you can pull it with your nail. If you would try to clip it with your nails and pull on it, you can actually grip it with your nails. So he says, if I get less than that, just tiny, tiny stubble, or even less, barely noticeable, then it's not considered a hair. So maybe I can shave at that point in time with a razor. That was Wolf Boskovitz's suggestion. The Chasam Sofer, just parenthetically, and we'll discuss his opinion in a few moments, when quoting this says, this really wasn't Wolf Boskovitz's idea. It had been presented by the Besamim Rosh. I don't know whether the Besamim Rosh had been read by Rav Boskovitz or not. The Besamim Rosh, a very interesting sefer, it came to light, I believe the year was 1793. I'm not 100% sure on that offhand, but I do know it was around that tkufa, by Saul Berlin, an interesting fellow in his own right, and it was attributed to the Rosh. Rabbeinu Asher, of Rishonic fame in the back of the Gemara, Tshuvas from the Rosh. And when people saw this, they were fascinated when it came out, and as they're going through it, they noticed many contradictions between the Besamim Rosh and the Rosh's other philosophies and other writings. Some very stark differences between the two. And over time, many Rabbanim, Mordechai Bennett was probably the one on the forefront to lead the assault, so to speak, have concluded that it was a forgery. It was a completely made-up work, and Rev Berlin kind of produced it on his own. There's been speculation with some other things of his also that were done in similar fashion. It's unclear. Others have maintained that it is accurate, and some maintain that Rev Berlin took some tshuvas of the Rosh and some writings and combined it with other things that aren't from the Rosh, and therefore it's kind of hard to decipher what's what. Either way, this is what came to light, and such a svara is found there as well. So the Noda of Yehuda gets this shaila, and he says, no dice. You can't do this. Now, according to Boskovitz and some Rosh perhaps, it seems that you would be allowed to do this. According to the Noda of Yehuda, he says, no, because if you're shaving, you're getting a little more than what you did yesterday. You didn't use a razor yesterday. The razor is going to still give you the closest shave. So you are still being mashkas. That which in all these other cases is not considered leaving over a hair, what do you want from my life? You know, so what? But it's still considered, since you're still getting something underneath there, it's not that it's not called a hair, it's not that it's not called hashkasa. For those other halachas, it's not considered leftover enough, or whatever it is, to constitute a hair for a par adum or whatever it is. But for shaving, it's still included in the Issa deraisa. So what we see in the Nod Yehuda is, no matter how close a shave you get, the minimal hair is still called a hair. Not like Rav Boskowitz. Rav Boskowitz was saying once you got below the point of pulling it with your fingernails, then it's not even a hair anymore. At least we don't know what he passed like Rav Boskowitz. He did receive the answer from the Rebbe. Presumably he would have listened to him. Rav Boskowitz was never implicated in any funny business. So that being the case, presumably he listened to the Nod Yehuda. But in the mindset of the Shoel, at least it wouldn't constitute being a hair. We do find that svara, interestingly enough, the Chasam Sofer addresses the same issue. He also does not like Rav Boskowitz's svara. But he says, if you shave, then the next day, there'll already be enough that you can pull with your fingernails. But it sounds like, in theory, he's comfortable with the svara. It sounds like the Chasam Sofer, in theory, would say that if you have less than the amount that you could pull with your fingernails, then it's not a hair. And therefore, theoretically, you could. He just doesn't think on a daily basis that would occur. Now, obviously, different people grow hair on their face and head, or lack thereof for me, in different fashion. So, you know, some people grow thicker beards. Some people, like me again, don't grow such a full beard. A lot may really depend on that. But what's interesting to note is the minimal shear of a hair, the Nod Yehuda has, is nothing, essentially, and it's still called Hashchasa. The Chasam Sofer does contain it. Now, what's the Nafkamina? Let's go to the Chafetz Chaim for a second. The Chafetz Chaim, who says, according to some, keep in mind it's ambiguous, shaving below a certain point is going to be Aser, you need to leave over something. According to the Nod Yehuda, it's now a Kula. Because the kula is, it's not hashchas until you get down to the way, way bottom of the hair. What was a chumra a few minutes ago is now a kula. And according to the Chasam Sofer, it's the other way around. What was a theoretical kula is now a chumra. Because since he said once you go below pulling with your fingers, it's already destroyed, that means you can't destroy it past that. So according to the opinion that the Chafetz Chaim meant, that it's not how you do it, it's once you do it with a cutting instrument, whether it be scissors, whether it be whatever it is, once you go below that, it's hashchasa, you can't go below that. Okay, so that is the fee that, according to the Nod Yehuda, one would be allowed to use an electric shaver, assuming it's not considered a razor, the mechanism. We'll get into that in a few minutes. According to the Chasam Sofer, you would not, because you get a close shave. It happens to be that people, myself included, who use electric shavers, do not really go with this approach. The approach that's taken more is Rav Henkin, Rav Moshe Feinstein, which is that it's not that you can't cut past a certain point. The method in which you cut is the primary concern. The method in which you cut is the primary concern. Hashchasa isn't the issue, because you see some, you can put on the creams, you can do that. And that's getting you a very close shave. It's the mechanism, and the truth is, you look through Rav Moshe's Tshuva, then you look through the Rishonim also, besides just what's in the Tshuva, it sounds very strong from the Rishonim that this seems to be what they're discussing. The difference that we mentioned, a razor is that one quick, you know, motion, and the scissors is the two blades pulling on the hair and cutting between the two blades. So most electric shavers use more of a scissor-like mechanism. Some of the newer ones do not, and that is an issue. But most of the shavers, and I don't want to get into specific ones because, to be honest with you, I don't know all the models and everything offhand. So I'm going with the theoretical right now. But most electric shavers do use a scissors technique. And certainly if there's a screen, which a lot of people don't like the shavers with the screen, but if there's a screen, then what's happening is that screen is just going against the face, and then you're clipping on top of that would certainly be fine, because then you're not, you know, that screen does create a minimal barrier. certainly the feet that know the Bihuda, and then on top of that, those generally use the scissors-like fashion above it. Granted, much better than the trimmers that the Chafetz Chaim was talking about, but the mechanism is misparayim, is scissors, it's not tar, it's not razor, and therefore Moshe Rav Henkin and many people in today's day and age are stomach on that. Some that do not appear to use this mechanism, although even that is disputed. Some people say what is advocated in the commercials isn't exactly the way it works practically. Some lift and cut shavers do lift, and then the way they cut it, it's a one blade and it's going right at the edge, which does seem to, at least some of the models very probably do act like a razor and not like a shaver, and that's why they would not be advocated. But certainly the ones with screens and the non-lift and cut other ones would be fine. And some of the lift and cuts don't really get as deep as the better models. So it really does depend on the model you have. I just want to make an awareness to some could be problematic. But it's the mechanism, not the shear of the hair. As I said before, even if somebody gets a very close shave and they don't have something they can pull on, we're not samech on the chasim sofer, or the theoretical from the chasim sofer, because the nod b'yudah does present a valid argument. We're dealing with an iser d'oraisa. Just something shocking, and this certainly isn't halacha l'maisa, but the pashup shot in the pasuk that Ibn Ezra says, at least the one with the kohanim, and then he advocates with the one that's to the general, because they are comparable. He puts it in context, and pashup shot in the mikra, especially after seeing the Ibn Ezra, sounds very strongly that it has nothing to do with shaving on a regular basis. It would be an avelus practice. It would be something for mourning, that if somebody passed away, they would shave to make themselves look different. Back in older, in ancient times, especially in the Middle East, not having a beard for a man was considered inappropriate. And we're going to get to the other issues that you raised in the beginning about Begadisha, but we haven't gotten there yet. We're just talking about the shaving issues right now. And it would be considered even degrading. It would, below his class. You didn't look very manly, which wasn't a good thing in those days. That being the case, they would do it. They would be self-defacing, when somebody would pass away. We see many practices like that in the ancient world. And therefore, that's what it was telling us not to perform that practice. That's what Ibn Ezra suggests is pashup shot.
Like Aaron? Aaron was prohibited from shaving. Aaron was prohibited from not shaving, right?
When?
After another bit of you died.
He was prohibited. He had to let his... Right, because Avelim have to let their... I mean, the truth is, Gemara learns...
Avelim, he said, to mourn, to shave.
Correct. You know, it's the minig avelus is to let one's beard grow. You know, there's a prohibition from shaving. Instead, we let it grow. Now, that could be the rabbanon, a lot of the mourning practices and asmachas and marmor and cotton, but either way, right, you cannot, as an act of mourning, you cannot shave. Back then, to shave was to look, inappropriate. Nowadays, to let your hair grow wild is looking inappropriate. So it's a different culture. That's what the Ibn says, Pashup Shah, the Pashup. So you say, big deal. That's Pashup Shah. We have many times that the Rishonim say Pashup Shah, and even though it's in conflict with Chazal, it's not advocating the practice, it's just saying that, there's value to Pashup Shah, the way a good mashal would be. You can read a Pasuk, and there's a mystical approach, perhaps, that you'll take. And you'll learn up this Pasuk, and you'll learn all the nuance and the different symbolism, etc., and you'll gain a tremendous perspective which may not have any practical application. But there's tremendous value in knowing it intellectually. So Pashup Shah, what oftentimes, when if it's going to be in conflict with halacha, you're not advocating practicing based on according to this, but it's like that other mystical one. There's some intellectual, some one of the Shivim Panim Latara, there's value, tremendous value in understanding that in an intellectual sense. Maybe there could be moral lessons that you could learn from it, even if in practice it's not going to be the halachic sense. The issue is that in his Hakdamah, Ibn Ezra makes it seem, and it's not 100% clear-cut, that he will not go against Chazal and present Pashup Shat when it's in conflict with Halacha. He'll do it when it's not in conflict with Halacha. When it's in conflict with Halacha, he will not do that. Now, it's not 100% clear. The Rashbam is very clear. He goes even when it's connected to Halacha. The Rashbam, who we know LaHalacha, did not practice what he said in his Perush on Chumash. We have halachic writings of his, which indicate that that's not necessarily the case. But he wanted to show what Pashup Shat in the Mikra was, and when it conflicted with halacha, he knew, and he presented in his, you know, writings that this is what he's doing. He did not assume that anybody would ever take it to, you know, halacha. It's meant to be to understand Pashup Shat in the Mikra. The Ibn Ezra seems to be going from a different perspective. That's fascinating why, and that's a different discussion philosophically why they would take that approach. But either way, why then is he advocating this? So you'll say, maybe this is a raya that Ibn Ezra didn't feel that, you know, the Hakdama that I read it. Maybe he didn't mean that he won't do it, just don't take it lahalacha. I'll do it, but don't take it lahalacha. It's just not common that he does it. Interestingly enough, there was a Rav, Rav Shmuel David Lutzato, otherwise known as Shadal. Not commonly known in today's day and age, but a very, very respectful Rav. He was very successful at combating many ideas of the Enlightenment. He was clean-shaven. There are pictures of him. And he was what we would say nowadays into then the fledgling field of academic biblical studies. But he did it from a very Orthodox perspective. And it's fantastic nowadays. His works are used by even non-Orthodox academics nowadays because they have tremendous value. But he wanted to present the Orthodox approach to how to address this new field of biblical criticism. He writes, even though he wasn't a fan of Ibn Ezra, we know that because he thought that the rationalist approach, taking mysticism out of things, he thought it took the heart out of Judaism. He felt it wasn't just the idea, but in terms of the academic study of the Chumash, he thought it had tremendous value, and he liked the Ibn Ezra's approach in many regards. Many times he didn't. On this pasuk in Shadal's writings, he strongly advocates the Ibn Ezra's approach. Okay, once again, what's the big deal? He does go sometimes Pashup Shat over Halacha. We know in Halacha he practiced Halacha. So he's presenting Pashup Shat in the Mikra. Well, we had a letter of his. He was very close with the Ketzos, the Avnei Milum. He was very close with the Ketzos' son-in-law, Rav Shmuel Yehuda Rappaport. And in one of the letters that he sent to Shmuel Yehuda Rappaport, he writes, showing some things that he doesn't like about the Ibn Ezra, but in the course of the letter, he says, but you know what? One thing that really resonates is this pshat in this pasuk, and even the halacha. And I'm not one to passim for other people, so I would never passim for other people, but for myself, this is how I act. Which sounds like he would use a razor on a regular basis, having nothing to do with the Chasam Sofer. Because he felt it was only an issue of availance. Now, this is not halacha maisa, that's not normative. He's the only person we've ever seen say that. And that being the case, you know, it's very difficult to reconcile. We do have many times when Pashup Shat in the Mikra seems to be in conflict with Halacha, and we don't take this. Why this one exception? I don't know. But either way, that is certainly not Halacha Maisa. At the same point in time, I'm not being critical of him at all. He was, you know, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and that was his opinion for himself. And he himself said it's only for personal, not for others. Beged Isha, there were many who said that, you know, and there are Rishonim who indicate that in the philosophy of the mitzvah, we find Tamei HaMitzvahs oftentimes presented by many, like the Chinuch and others, and they're not suggesting that this is the only reason. They're not suggesting if this reason doesn't apply that you can discard the mitzvah. They're just saying there are morals and other, you know, lessons to be learned to get the spirit of the mitzvah in a way that we can understand it and embed ourselves besides the mitzvah. No, none of the Rishonim would advocate if the reason doesn't apply, not doing it. And we do find that many of the Rishonim say it's to not look like women. Because men are supposed to look like men, women are supposed to look like women. Why we're concerned with men looking like women, some Rishonim seem to take the approach because the men are going to actually dress like women, get comfortable with the women are going to get comfortable with the men, and then the men are going to seduce the women. So it's not exactly the same thing why people nowadays who dress like women, but at the same point in time, there were Rishonim who said this is the problem. Other Rishonim felt it wasn't exactly this problem, but that was their concern with this type of behavior. So, they say that that's the idea behind it, and there have been many Rabbanim who say, even if you'll circumvent the issue of shaving, with the shaving aspect of it, you have this. The concern that one would say is that the rules of Beged Isha seem to be cultural, and we see it fluctuates. And therefore, however it happens, Be'isr or Behater, once you see that there are practices that men do, even though they used to be exclusive for women, the fact that men do them all the time now, it's very difficult to make the argument that it's a Beged Isha at that point in time. For example, I think that it's very difficult to make the argument that wearing an earring is Beged Isha in today's day and age. Because it's common for men to wear earrings. 50 years ago, I think it would have been a problem. Now, one can counter this argument and say you have to deal with two different cultures. There's the regular secular culture amongst whom we live, and then there's the adherence to halacha, and how do they behave? And I get that. And because of that, maybe I would back down a little bit about that earring thing, but I'm not 100% certain.
For which was okay.
I'm not sure. And I'm not sure which one you could look at, but I can hear a strong argument that our culture defines the behavioral, the norms. And therefore, just because society at large, men do certain things, the fact that Jewish, halachically observant men don't do them, that mandates what's Beged Isha and Beged Isha. And there are poskim on both sides of the fence here, and therefore I think that it warrants the kol hapachas, because with Beged Isha it is a nisr d'oraisa, to not do things that are not considered normal for Orthodox men to do. Culturally, in some countries, it was very common for halachically observant men to wear rings. Other places it wasn't. In today's day and age, it's a whole mix. It's some circles it's unheard of, and in some circles it's unheard of the other way. So I don't think that's Beged Isha. Because even halachically observant men, first of all, in Sephardic communities, for Dari Daras, they've always worn more jewelry than in many Ashkenazi communities. And even Ashkenazi communities, it's very common for men, especially in the workplace and other places, to wear wedding rings. In certain segments of the Jewish culture, I don't wear rings personally, it's just because culturally we don't do it, you know? It's just the, you know, this society that we're around. There's nothing wrong with it. Other people do.
Men were wearing rings continually.
For sure. They definitely did. And therefore, I think that it's very difficult to say it's Beged Isha. Conversely, if no men would be wearing rings anymore, then I would say, even though in the times of Gemara they wore rings, now it's become Beged Isha. Now it's a problem. It's very much, do women do it, do women not do it? If you wear a kilt in Scotland, it's not Beged Isha. If you wear a plaid skirt in Baltimore, it is. It depends where and why. You know, that's really what it comes down to.
So it is society overall, not just...
So it is society, but you do have to... I do want to still point out that there's a possibility, and a strong possibility, that it may be the subset of society of halachically observant Jews. Halachically observant Jews, there are enough of them out there that it's common that they're clean-shaven. And therefore, I think it's a very hard argument to make that it's considered Beged Isha. And therefore, you know, when it comes to shavers, once again, I have presented many opinions. Personally, I would advocate Rav Moshe's... Obviously, there's no chiyuv to shave. I would advocate from a halachic standpoint Rav Moshe's position that the method of the electric shavers for most, other than certain lift and cuts, you know, is fine, and that it's perfectly fine for one from a halachic standpoint to shave. But is halacha all there is?
Wait, including a lift and cut or without the lift?
Without certain models of lift and cut. Those I'm not comfortable with, because those seem to act more like a razor. And therefore you're getting too close of a shave, so certainly according to the Chafetz Chaim and even, you know, the Nod of Yehuda perhaps, and, you know, certainly the Chasam Sofer, it would be a problem if you went that it's a how much error, but once you throw into the mix Rav Moshe, who isn't necessarily arguing with the Chasam Sofer and the Nod of Yehuda, it's, you know, from their writings, it's not clear that they're talking about a shear without the derech of tar, you know, of kiluch. So that being the case, you know, Rav Moshe's argument sounds very reasonable, and it's a very commonly postulated in, you know, these countries. It does seem to be, you know, very easily read into many divishonim. But there's a whole other aspect of that, and that is, besides the Beit Isha, the mystical approach. You find the Gemara says that the beauty of the face is considered the beard. Rabbi Yochanan was considered one of the most beautiful people, but he didn't make the top of the list because he didn't have a beard. Right? So when people, the seven most beautiful men, Rabbi Yochanan didn't make the top list because he didn't have a beard. You know, that's what happened. But we see that. Is this mystical, or is this just an objective thing that the Gemara is talking about beauty, and it's telling you he wasn't considered as beautiful he would have been, and the only thing that didn't get him there was this? Is it saying just practically he wasn't as beautiful of a man because of this, or is it saying that there's something inherently mystically wrong and therefore he couldn't have this, you know, element to him? So when you read the Pashut Pshat in the Gemara, it just sounds like they're objectively saying he didn't have it. There's certain things that I've never heard anybody advocate for mystical reasons now. The Gemara definitely seems to advocate that it was very beneficial to be heavier back in earlier times. Nowadays, that doesn't seem to be culturally, for the most part, you know, what people are striving for.
Smart is because they have
very...
What?
Smart is because the rich people have...
That's fine, but I don't think it was an intellectual thought process that people were saying, oh, he's not really good looking, but he's good looking because, you know, I want to be his friend because he's affluent, because certain things were associated with a certain way, and certain the upper echelon of society had a certain look to them. You know, I think people's tastes, certainly in clothing and even in what's considered attractive and beautiful, change over time. And that changed over time. So one could very strongly make the argument that Gemara was just saying very simply why Rabbi Yochanan wasn't as beautiful as these other people. And in today's day and age, maybe it would be the opposite, because beards, at least in Western society, aren't considered, for the most part, it's less common for people to have facial hair, certainly long facial hair. One could make the argument that it is a mystical thing in play here. It's attributed to the Arizal that one should never touch their beard, never trim it, and mystically, it's a very, you know, a very bad thing. Somehow the hashpa from Shemayim for the intellectual pursuit of the person comes through the beard, and, you know, therefore you have certain specific Hasidic sects where they certainly grow longer beards, and some won't even trim their beards. A slight question that you can have on not ever trimming one's beard is that there's a Rashi in Krisus that discusses, you know, the Gemara is discussing the Shemen HaMishcha and the anointing oil, and it was put besides on the Kalim of the Mishkan itself, it was put on Aaron. And the Gemara discusses how two droplets went down Aaron's beard. And he was very nervous that maybe he was over Me'ila because it was, you know, beautiful, it looked like two pearls. He thought too much Shemen HaMishcha was used on him, and maybe it was over Chas Shalom Me'ila because it's hektish, this oil. And the Gemara says, no, it wasn't hektish. And then he was afraid maybe Moshe was over Me'ila because he poured too much, even if Aaron wasn't the one to do it. And then, you know, he matov manan, shemesachem gamechad, both of them, you know, didn't do anything wrong. And it was very beautiful somehow, had these two pearls in his beard. And it says that they would go up and down when he would be misaper. And Rashi in Croesus presents two possibilities what that means. Either when he would talk, they would go up and down, or when he would trim his beard, they would go up so he could trim. So you see, and once again, this is an Agadate Gemara, however one takes it, but you see the way that Rashi is interpreting this Gemara in one day, the spring, that he would trim his beard. Now, I would assume the Kohen Gadol, the epitome of the Kohen Gadol, Aaron, who sometimes... you know, just like Pharaoh means king of Egypt, it's not a specific person. In the Chumash, sometimes the word Aaron doesn't mean Aaron. It means the Kohen Gadol. There are many halachas that are said to Aaron and doesn't mean Aaron. It means Kohen Gadol. Obviously, because Aaron is epitomizing what a Kohen Gadol is. The Kohen Gadol is nichnas l'fnei Elohim, possibly trimmed his beard. It's a question on those who would advocate mystically not trimming one's beard. But it's still, Aaron did have a beard. It's clear from the Gemara. So maybe trimming would be okay mystically, but still one should have a beard. And there are those who advocate that. I'll just point out, in Italy, all Chachmei Italia for hundreds of years were clean-shaven. There were tremendous Chachamim. And there were tremendous Mekubalim. One, who you may have heard of, the Ramchal, was clean-shaven. So people don't picture that. But when you think of Kabbalists throughout the generations, certain names usually come to the forefront of your mind. The Ramat, or Moshe Cordovero. That Rizal probably is up there, Rav Chaim Vital, his Talmud. And then you start thinking the Shloah, the Ramchal, they're in there. So he, from Chachmei Italia, it's rumored, would shave his beard. We have Chasim Sofer and others say another Kabbalist who is also one of the top names. I didn't mention now because I wanted to set it up. Perhaps you've heard of the Ramah Mipano, who wrote the Asar Mamoros from the 16th century. We're getting pretty old here. He, the Chasim Sofer, says was completely clean shaven, not one hair left. He would shave. In fact, he held, it's attributed, that in Kabbalah, there may be an idea to have a beard. I don't know whether to trim, not trim, whatever it is. But that's only in Eretz Yisrael. When you're in Chutz La'aretz, you should. Now, I don't know, coin that Rashi, maybe you'll say the Mishkan in the Midbar had some sort of din like that. I don't know. But this is what's attributed in the world of mysticism. The Ramah Mipano, the Chasim Sofer, of course, it's not the same tshuva as we said before. This is a different one, a few tshuvas later. It says that the Ramah Mipano, it's known that he would shave. All completely clean shaven.
But how were they doing it? With a tar, or they were doing it...
He doesn't say. It could have been with some. For all we know, I find it difficult to hear that he had like Shadal. I know Ramchal and Shadal have the same last name, Lame, actually Luzzato. But it's I don't believe they're related. I think it's just because of the city of Luzzato. But, you know, I have...
They were using electric shavers, so what were they using?
Well, they were mystics ahead of their time. But no, I don't know. I don't know if they held of some sort of svara similar to Rav Boscovitz, where they took it off with a sand the first time, and then they would shave with a blade. I don't know. We don't find out, but I would guess, if I had to, that it was cream. Like, I know my great-grandfathers would do with cream, you know, and that's what many people did for who knows how long. So these things, these products have been around, the Gemara talks about them, so I would assume that only because you can't get that close with the scissors, and I have a hard time hearing that they were using a tar, a blade. Especially when the Chasim Sofer is clearly not advocating using the blade. He offers it, you know, as in his halachic writings, and he's saying how, yeah, there's no problem because the Ramah Mipano was clean shaven, so he obviously assumed he was shaving in a halachically permissible and presumably Kabbalistically permissible way. The Chasim Sofer says because people were very upset, because it was unique to Italy. In the ancient world, and Chasim Sofer is not ancient anymore, he's more modern than that, but still, in a couple centuries ago, in most of the countries amongst whom we were living, it was still very common to have facial hair. Most people were not clean-shaven. In Italy, it was unique, and therefore, since it was jarring to some others, so the Chasim Sofer says, I don't know what the big deal is, he says. It's clear from the Gemara that it's mutter to be clean-shaven. You're coming to me with Kabbalah, he says. He says, first of all, we don't deal with these things. I don't deal with the Kabbalah. Let's deal with the Halacha. What's the Halacha? And then he says, and even according to Kabbalah, and then he quotes from the Ramah Mipano, who is one of the fathers of Kabbalistic understanding and writing. And it also is interesting, there seems to be dispute as to what the Arizal advocated, and perhaps that some of his Talmidim maybe did shave. So it's unclear in the world of Kabbalah. There definitely is an approach attributed to the Arizal that one should not shave their beard at all. Now, just because I don't want to be critical, and you shouldn't take me to be saying that I'm being critical and saying that the Kabbalists who say that you should grow your beard, just because I'm citing these examples, doesn't mean that there's not a school of thought in Kabbalah that one should. There's machlokas in halacha and there's machlokas in Kabbalah. So there are you know, those who attribute to the Arizal and Mekubalim, clearly in the times of the Chasam Sofer and perhaps earlier and certainly up to the present, who say that having a beard and possibly not even touching it at all is Kabbalistically advised. There are others, like the Maharam Mipano, and presumably the Ramchal, who would say shaving is fine, at least in Chutz Laretz, and it's not so clear in Eretz Yisrael, but perhaps not in Eretz Yisrael. But then you have the Chasam Sofer also saying, that's all Kabbalah. He didn't want to deal with that. And he said, you know, if you want to be above Lifnei Mishur Hadin in that regard, that's a personal choice you want to make. In Halacha, it would be fine. So those are the various you know, approaches in Halacha and Kabbalah. You know, we've gone through this evening. If you're shaving for professional reasons, so you know, continue to do so. If you are shaving this Friday for you know, Lag BaOmer reasons, you know, now we've gone through permissibility and non-permissibility.
So
and if you're not shaving, then that's also.
So how is Yosef shaving?
Yosef.
That's in. Before he stands in front of Paro, has he shaved?
So, a few things. First of all...
And he was considered beautiful.
He was considered beautiful, yeah. So first of all, giluach means trimming in hair cutting. Also, it doesn't necessarily mean a close shave. Second of all, you do have to realize it's called a matan Torah. So... It's called a matan Torah. Now, the Gemara in Chulin does seem to discuss Yosef perhaps keeping a lot of things. It's not so clear. You can look at Tosos, maybe Basa Mechira, where they're eating non-shechta meat. They were eating shechta meat, you know, Tvach Tavach V'Hachin. Shechted meat maybe is necessary. So maybe they were keeping the mitzvahs or not. Certainly the Parshas Drachim holds, you know, it's a Mishnah Malach Sefer. He goes through a lot of Chumash. He goes through like Kabbalistic style learning. He holds that the machlokas between the Shvatim and Yosef was on this Nekuda, whether Kodem Matan Torah, they needed to keep the Torah or not, whether they had a Din of Yisrael, or they didn't have a Din of Yisrael. And he reads that into this, that scenario of, you know, when Yosef gave them food, did he share, he parabit lam b'sashchidus, this is when he pulled back the b'sashchidus to show him the shechted. Then you look at Tosus, maybe he was just showing them that it had been killed as opposed to dying. So, you know, it's up in the air. I don't think you can ask a question for sure from Kodem Matan Torah. And even if you could, I don't know that Giluach there, that, you know, it could mean a haircut. And even if it referred to his facial hair, it could mean a trim. So.
Does this have anything to do with growing your pace lower?
No. Pace is a totally different.
Has to do with cutting or.
Correct. Peyus is Los Akifa Pas Rosh, you know, that's Peyus and Rosh, that we weren't discussing. Today we're just discussing Pas and Zakon, which is a different Isser. Okay?